Hello, and welcome to the On SOA podcast series. In this special set of podcasts, SOA journalist Joe McKendrick interviews the authors and contributors behind the book, SOA Design Patterns, the newest title in the Prentice Hall Service-Oriented Computing series from Thomas Earle. You can learn more about this book and download sample chapters at soapatterns.com. Also, while listening to this podcast, you can look up any design patterns being discussed at soapatterns.org, a community site dedicated to the ongoing development and expansion of the SOA Patterns catalog. For more information about other series titles, be sure to visit soabooks.com. Now, here's Joe McKendrick.
Hello, this is Joe McKendrick, contributor to ZDNet's SOA blog, as well as the eBizQ SOA in Action blog site. I'm here today to talk about SOA Design Patterns, the latest work that has been released by Thomas Earle, a very prolific author. You may have tuned into our previous sessions. Thomas and I had talked about the various motivations behind the book and an overview of the patterns and the purposes they serve in implementing SOA into the business. And today I'm pleased to be joined by Clemens Utschik from Oracle Corporation. He was a contributor to the book. Welcome, Clemens.
Thanks, Joe. Welcome back. Happy to be with you on that podcast.
And I had the pleasure of meeting Clemens at the SOA symposium in Amsterdam, where we formally launched the book, and you and I had some great discussions about some of the issues around SOA, Enterprise Service Bus, and all that good stuff. Clemens, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? What brought you into the SOA world, the SOA world, and tell us about the type of work you do at Oracle.
Okay, so thanks for the quick introduction, and eventually you really pronounced my name correctly this time, Joe. I'm very happy. So about me, I used to work for Oracle in Austria in good old Europe doing consulting and crisis management, and that eventually turned me over to one of our first customers that used the Oracle SOA Suite people, in fact, in Turkey, where I met my today's manager, and shortly after that I moved over to the United States into the product management team as strategist for SOA and emerging standards. Here's what I'm doing today. Mostly it's advisory, obviously, to our customers internally as well as externally. And I'm responsible for cross-product integration, which is all around the idea of getting disparate systems and heterogeneous systems together, no matter if it's our internal development teams or internal products, but also at our customers. And all that is obviously one of the key goals that SOA has, to provide one unified view of a process or of a whole system or of an order that flows through heterogeneous systems, still, that it can be reused, where the pieces and bits of the infrastructure can be reused. And this is what I'm doing day in and out, publishing once in a while, helping Thomas Earle, contributing stuff, all cool things.
Fantastic. And as I understand, you've contributed to three of the 81 design patterns that has been published in this edition of SOA Design Patterns. And I'll just go over them one by one. The first is the canonical schema bus. Second is the UI mediator. And third is compensating service transaction. And Clemens, I want to explore each of these in a bit of detail to examine their role in building and deploying SOA. And let's start first with the canonical schema bus. I see the word bus in there, so right away I'm thinking in terms of widespread integration, the role of the enterprise service bus. Is this the right way to think about it? Why don't you tell us a bit about it?
So you're, of course, on the right track here. So what is the canonical schema bus? And Thomas Earle and me talked fairly long about how we could name it. So basic idea is obviously integration happens one way or the other, especially very down at the data and message exchange pattern level, on a bus system or on a distributed cloud. But for the sake of simplicity, let's name that a bus. And what is the biggest issue, right? Most customers today that we see and that I've worked with have obviously heterogeneous systems. Might it be legacy, might it be new development. And obviously, the more of those guys you try to connect and orchestrate, the more you get into the business of having 15 different legacy formats, having transformations everywhere in your processes and on that bus. You get into nastiness of versioning, nastiness of dependencies, and obviously the goal of a public service being able to produce and provide an easy to understand and easy to read for the service consumer data model is completely gone. Or do you think it would help anybody being service consumer to see a service description that says C underscore 5X 7 epsilon, which is from a host and means customer ID? Or wouldn't it be just better to have that customer ID and maybe even standards based? So this is the base motivation here, to provide an infrastructure and an enforcement on the other side to have the bus, your central integration infrastructure, being based on a standard canonical schema model that is driven by a standards organization. For the telco, you could think about SID, for example, or in many other cases, you could think about OEGIS standard data models, right? So this is one of the key pieces here. The second piece to it is to extend this idea of the canonical schema a little bit and make sure that the bus only talks to its service consumers, literally to the boundary of the service provider plus a little bit of a broker layer in this canonical model, and also in canonical terms when it comes to quality of service, in canonical terms when it comes to message exchange patterns. So this means the bus itself is literally built and enforcing the rule of having one canonical model. Behind the scenes, when you go to the service consumers and service providers, obviously, in a brokered way, it's their responsibility or the responsibility of what we call connectors and brokers to transform the legacy message exchange patterns, requirements of quality of service, as well as their data formats into the canonical schema. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. One of the biggest challenges I think we see out there is organizations to this day do not have a single view of the truth, be it their customers or their products, or there's so many different ways that data is defined and handled across the enterprise. This looks like a way SOA can be employed to better provide this single view of the truth.
I agree. However, I think there is also a big challenge. And when we implemented this idea of the canonical schema bus at many customers, right, the biggest challenge was to, A, get them to a point to think about one canonical view of the world. And on the other side, there are differences, sometimes subtle, sometimes not that subtle, where people say, you know what, my customer is the base, the same base customer, but I need extensions, right? And so the key of, obviously, canonical model is to drive it extensible and to make sure it is extensible and versionable. If you try to enforce a hard, non-extensible canonical model on top of an organization, the organization will freak you. And you will have to fight more political issues than you fight at the end of the day to get something running. And this is, in general, one of the big challenges with SOA if you start looking beyond technology. And enforcing a canonical object model on an organization, especially where you still have a bunch of silos and still have a bunch of small silo dukes that trade things underneath the covers, it's getting even more interesting and more challenging. So on the one hand, provide a standards-based object model. On the other side, make sure that it's extensible.
Okay, great. Great. And Clemens, another design pattern that you have been working on and developed for the book is the UI mediator, user interface mediator. And here we're looking at a service-oriented solution that provides a consistent interactive user experience. Is that what you're looking at here?
Yeah, I mean, so with SOA in general, and especially with the understanding of me and the guys that contributed this pattern to Thomas Earle's book, we talk so much about asynchronicity, right? Systems being loosely coupled, not anymore this idea of having everything being synchronous interactions. However, with all the customers out there and all the people out there that use SOA, you hardly ever get the chance to build SOA on a green floor. And what does that mean? For us, it means there are legacy applications. There are applications where users that work with them every day use them in a really request response like fashion. This means you search for an address, you immediately get the address back, and the next step is the next page, and so on and so forth. Think of when you type in something in an application, right? It's a very much almost synchronous user experience. So obviously, there is a big difference between what the backend and the idea of SOA being around asynchronicity and the frontend that customers and users demand to be really fast responding and guiding through the process. So now in the middle, we have this interesting idea and standard that came up called WS Human Task, right? And that thing is even more asynchronous. So the big question was, how can we marry those concepts together without, on the one hand, violating service-oriented concepts, but on the other side, allowing the end user of the application or the front-end that is backed by a service-oriented back-end to have this request-response-like fashion. And the magic word, word here is called service-human interaction layer, called SHIL. It's basically an agent that does the magic for you. And does the magic for you in the sense that it will ask the backend infrastructure, once you have completed the task, is there a new task, and give me eventually the URI to a next page, to a new application that I have to bootstrap. So in this case, behind the scenes, we still value and still use asynchronicity, and to the front-end user, we provide a view that feels request-response-like.
Okay. Okay, certainly addressing that so-called last mile of SOA, the interface with the front-end user.
Exactly, and that's, I mean, we see, especially when we go into large-scale organizations, right, and there is a bunch of applications, you hardly can convince people, especially, for example, an accountant that puts in, like, I don't know, 1,000 journal entries a day into an application to use and work in a worklist style, right? So think of the worklist or this work basket system where you have an application and you use that application, you complete one task, you might press refresh or not, and then you have another task. So if you think about the process here with a bunch of micro use cases, for example, find all the stuff, create that journal entry and whatnot else, so disparate micro use cases, the accountant will go crazy if we tell them, like, okay, you have to click for every journal entry, you have to click 50 times to open these 50 micro use cases one after the other. When in the old application, it was merely a click of tab and enter to get from one page to the next, right? So this is the business requirement and the business reason why we came up with that pattern and why we had to come up with it.
Okay, great. And as we talk about the efficiency, improving the efficiency of service-oriented architecture, we have an additional pattern that you have developed and published in the book, compensating service transaction. And as I understand it, it provides a compensated routines for runtime exceptions, right, which typically could tie up a lot of your system resources.
Of course, and this was an interesting one. When we first started off, I mean, coming out of a company like Oracle, where obviously a lot is on transactional consistency, right? Coming up with a second scheme that would allow people to still achieve a business transaction sort of rollback that you can control rather than locking in resources over a two-phase commit was, I think, a very, very important step. On the other side, for us, internally and with our customers, a challenging step. So as you know, there are two models of how you can handle transactions in systems. One is backward-based transactions and transaction coordination, and the other one is called forward-based transaction compensation. Backward-based is basically around the idea of atomic transactions and end-phase commits. So you have a centralized transaction manager that sits somewhere that stores all the information so that you're able to revert back to the original state in case of failure happens in a system. However, this requires two important things. Number one, each of the resources has to provide a transactional contract, right? Being able to enlist itself into an XA resource. Number two is the transaction manager and the whole concept of the atomic transaction will, one way or the other, need to lock resources to make sure that these resources can be rolled back and it knows the original state, right? So obviously, if you think about a highly distributed heterogeneous system that might have especially long-running transactions, a core model of web service transactions might not be the right thing to use. And here, the idea of compensation, as we know it from, for example, the business process execution language comes into place. A forward-based model where we give control to the user in case of error to model its compensation behavior. So the behavior to roll back or at least to notify systems that down the line some error happened. And that might be everything from literally modeling a rollback and having the process infrastructure being your transaction manager where you save the state before anything happens, to the point where you just say, you know what, it's say a database and we committed that stuff down and a bunch of triggers happened. There is no way for us to roll that back implicitly down the line. So just go and notify the administrator that, yes, here with that order ID, some problem happened. Please go figure out in your database what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's very, very easy to see the two differences here. One, obviously, right, in many cases, there is a super strict rule or super strict requirement. Very short-lived transactions, there is no point of trying to roll back anything by hand, hardcore reliance on a transaction manager, right? This is proven technology, and it will make sure that whatever happens, you are able to reset back to the original state before the transaction happens. However, the more you get into heterogeneous systems that are highly distributed, that are long running, the more you don't want to lock down resources everywhere. You rather want to provide a loosely coupled model to be able to still control after the flow that has executed, to control the steps back and implement whatever you want there.
Okay. Okay, great. Some very innovative patterns that are part of the SOA design patterns published in the book by Thomas Earle, published by Prentice Hall. Clemens, I understand you're also you're co-authoring a book called SOA with Java. Can you give us a little description of what the book will cover and will include some of these patterns we've discussed?
Sure. So after I contributed and helped contributing to the design patterns book, Thomas came up with like, hey, Clemens, do you also want to maybe help out a little bit and work on the SOA with Java book? And here is the interesting aspect. Obviously, coming very much from a consulting and advisory background, the first version of the patterns that we sent to Thomas, and I recall the day, had a bunch of code in them. It was either pseudocode, it was a little bit of Java, a little bit of people and whatnot. And the first answer I got from Thomas is, rip out all the code. I want to have really generic patterns and really in the sense of pattern, right? Rather than providing an implementation, rather provide a guided path through how you can implement it conceptually. And here is what makes SOA with Java interesting, because here we bring the pattern and the theory plus the implementation guide into the reality of the Java language, right? How would you implement a service human interaction layer in Java? How do you implement your services with means of J2EE, of Java, or any other thing, right? So SOA with Java is really sort of like the bring it down to earth and make, in the case you're using Java, it's most likely the second book you should read after the design patterns.
Excellent, excellent. And the surveys I've conducted in my work and what I've seen, there's a lot of Java implementations out there that are looking at moving to service-oriented architecture. It's a really big deal in the Java world, J2EE or Java EE world.
I could not agree more with you, Joe, on that one. I think a lot over the last 5, 6, 7 years, a lot of big applications have been developed in Java, some of them more after principles of modularity and object orientation, some even more with things like inversion of control, obviously the emergence of Spring and whatnot else. However, there are still large-scale monoliths out there in Java, and obviously Java has and is a lot of potential for creating platform-independent solutions, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Where the book is interesting, I believe, is given that we come from very different backgrounds and very different companies. You're well aware of there is Satadru, there are people from IBM, from Sun and whatnot else, right? It's also a good way of us internally coming up with the perfect platform idea of how you implement, right? Possibly the usage of OSGI for certain pieces and whatnot else. So overall, I think it's going to be a really cool book to read.
Great. Looking forward to it. What's the publication date on that?
Well, we look very much towards the end of the year, and we will see if there's any slippery. Obviously, we're all not bored, and we try to convene and meet every other week on progress and where we go. But still, I mean, there's plenty of work to do, and we want to make sure that it's good to the point where Thomas, the perfectionist, is happy with it.
Great, great. We're all looking forward to that. And, of course, SOA Design Patterns is available now, again, published by Prentice Hall. There's lots of information available on the book at a website, www.soapatterns.org. We urge everyone to check that out. You can view the various patterns there. And another great thing about this book and website is it's a very open process. The authors encourage contributions, new ideas. As I understand it, there's a number of new patterns under development that may become part of this. It's a very much a community process. And Clemens, before we go, are there any new patterns you're working on or future underway?
Well, there is a bunch of things that are spinning through my head eventually in the context of distributed event clouds. We will see where that goes. I mean, obviously, we do a lot of R&D where the future could be and things that we could use more, such as the famous application grid and what we can do with a grid-based infrastructure. There are a couple of patterns that Dave Chappell contributed on that side. So that's definitely something to look more into that will, come up very soon in a broader sense of what you could do with it. And I'm always on the search for cool new things. And obviously very proven things. I remember the patterns that we contributed went through extensive review by the industry analysts, by industry people from different companies. So obviously, when it comes to patterns, we have to make sure that we contribute and that we work on things that are highly proven. This is not a pattern catalog is definitely not the thing to try out brand new things that no one has implemented successfully, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And just to reiterate what you said, these patterns that you see in SOA Design Patterns and on the website have been very well scrutinized and vetted and tested. These are patterns that have been looked at by a lot of people, have been tested, and are ready to go in your enterprise. And, I've been speaking with Clemens Uchik, Senior Principal Product Manager with Oracle Corporation and contributor to SOA Design Patterns. Thank you, Clemens. It was great speaking with you.
Thank you very much, Joe. It was a pleasure to be with you and chat a little bit about the patterns and where we think future might go.
Likewise. Look forward to your future works. Again, this is Joe McKendrick. I want to thank everyone for joining us in this installment of our series on SOA Design Patterns.
Thank you for listening to this installment of the On SOA podcast series. To learn more about the Prentice Hall Service-Oriented Computing series from Thomas Earle, please visit soabooks.com. Also, all the books in the series are available online at Safari Books Online, which can be accessed at safari.informit.com.